sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
Shut up!
Leave me alone. Yeah. Hey, what it look like? Fuck you, leave me alone. Hey, what it look like? Fuck you, leave me alone. Yeah. Hey, what it look like? Fuck you, leave me alone. Fuck you, leave me alone. Fuck you, leave me alone. Fuck. You leave me alone. If you know the words, sing along. Fuck you, leave me alone. Fighting for my respect. Receive it or nothing else. Preaching and geeking. I kind of think that I'm Malcolm X. Welcome. I'm sorry. I'm laughing at, I just started this episode by saying, fuck you, leave me alone. And now I'm about to say, welcome, bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am B Black, a.k.a. B Blizzak, a.k.a. B Dot Black, a.k.a. Mr. Shut Up Podcast.com, a.k.a. Le Grand Papa B. Before I start the show, I want to remind you returning listeners that this podcast is still protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. Hey, this episode is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin territory on Sunday, May 21st. 7:33 p.m. Still sunny out there. Sunday of a long weekend. Sunday of a long. If you'll notice, I seem a little more relaxed because tomorrow's a holiday. And last but not least, this episode is brought to you by the letter F. F for fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then, you know, fuck you too. That is correct. I am. There's a lot of weed on my desk, but that's not the reason why I'm relaxed. It's because it feels good not having to. Imagine having a job that you look forward to Mondays. Imagine that. Imagine. Just dream with me, right? Dream with me. Now, wake up to reality. I'm not one of those people. But I am grateful that tomorrow's a holiday. It's, for the rest of Canada, well, for majority of Canada, it's, what's that white chick's name? Queen Victoria's birthday, I believe, one of those queens, from the monarchy. And, but in Quebec, it's a day of the patriot. I've been telling people it's Quebec's opportunity to say, fuck the English, fuck les estis d'anglais. Anyway, yeah, anyway, let me not put words in their mouth. All right. Introduction, let me break the ice with you folks before I jump into the following two segments of this podcast. But the first things first, last episode was recorded on Wednesday, and Wednesday was what it was, it must have been the 17th. Let me just confirm. Shut Up Podcast, and the date was, yeah, Wednesday we were the 17th, thank God. Okay. Now, at the risk of losing my Haitian license, I should have known, or I should have brought up the fact that the following day,
May 18th is Haitian Flag Day. Haitian Flag Day. So what is Haitian Flag Day, you might ask? Well, let me allow Dr. Bertrude Albert to break it down for you. Break it down for us, sister. Because, you know, she reads books and shit. So here we go from her Instagram account.
We love our flag. We've got blue and red running through our veins. But we've got another flag, the black and red, that's also used in the country. Where does it come from? Both the blue and red and black and red flags were used by our African ancestors during the Haitian Revolution. In 1804, when Haiti overthrew the French and became the first free black republic in the world, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, he officially adopted the blue and red flag. May 18th, 1803, Dessalines took the French flag and he ripped out the white part. He had Catherine Flan sew together the blue, which represented the black people in the nation, and the red, which represented the mixed race people. He said symbolically, these two groups were coming together in order to overthrow the white people. In 1805, Dessalines crowned himself emperor of Haiti, and he adopted a new flag. Red, which represented freedom, and black, which represented death. The motto of the Haitian people was freedom or death. In 1806, Dessalines was assassinated, and Haiti split off into two different territories, two different regimes. In the south, there was the Republic of Haiti, which was led by a mixed-race man named Alexandre Pétion. He adopted the blue and red flag. In the north, there was the Kingdom of Haiti, and this was led by the African man Henri Christophe. Christophe adopted the red and black flag. In 1820, King Henri Christophe killed himself, The two different territories united together once more as the Republic of Haiti. The leader was a man named Boyer. He was the successor of Pétion. The Republic of Haiti adopted the blue and red flag, which now had the coat of arms, which was designed by Pétion. The last time we see this black and red flag officially adopted by the Haitian people is during the Duvalier regime, which lasted between 1957 and 1986. Duvalier removed the Cap of Liberty from the top of the palm tree. He also positioned the black part of the flag right next to the flagstaff, and he left the red part waving freely. Duvalier said that black was the true color of Haiti, and so it had to dominate the staff. Wow. Whereas red, that represented the mixed race people, and they were subservient in the Haitian society. It's important to note that Duvalier came into power after the US occupation, and that's when the US came and put the light-skinned people in positions of power all across the nation. And so Duvalier was fighting to regain control for black people. In 1986, Baby Doc was exiled, and the blue and red flag returned.
Wow. There you have it. There you have it. Dr. Bertrude Albert. I can't pronounce that in English, but doesn't matter. But now you know, all right? The more you know. Now, it's interesting. She said blue and red. You heard her, right? And I got Rouge et Bleu because of, hold on, this song, just a sec. Let me see what comes on.
Rouge et Bleu. 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 Yeah. Côté non passé, y'a petit Rouge et Bleu. Que ça qui panique, y'a péré les pompiers.
Tout le monde debout.
Pas les pompiers qui ca éteint du feu ça. Nan tempête éclair. L'orage. Si Mounio n'a pas besoin de faire sauvage. Les qui te volent tennis pour maman, yo, c'est dommage. On l'a n'est volé le pied, lui tire la grosse. Boy, yo, vendredi.
That's a dope ass beat, but the lyrics, it's like, come on, Wyclef. You know what I mean? We ain't talking about. First part of the song, it's talking about how a dude got his shoes robbed. And you know what? Who am I to tell Wyclef what to do with his creativity? But, you know. Dope ass track. So, Rouge et Bleu, man. Happy belated Haitian Flag Day. I gotta shout out my cousins. See, my relatives are more Haitian than I am. What sucks is I was scrolling through Facebook, and one of them was like, one of my relatives were like, waved the flag, and I'm like, oh shit, that's right. Haiti. But anyways, yeah. Anyways, that's where we at. Okay, let's jump to. Now, May 18th is, like I mentioned, Haitian Flag Day. Write it down. And May 19th, it was Malcolm X's birthday, which is why today's episode is called I Am Malcolm X. it's, you know what? Instead of telling you, I'll save it for, we're going to have a little Remember Malcolm during my final thoughts portion of this podcast, all right? Okay, so, yeah, so happy birthday, Brother Malcolm. And it's funny, what's interesting is, it's not, I mean, May 19, 1995, I remember memorizing that date. Excuse me. While reading his biography, I was fascinated at the idea of him going to, when he went to prison and he memorized the dictionary or he read the dictionary to increase his vocabulary. So I was trying to be like smart like him. I don't know. I just remember thinking that it's one of those dates that I needed to remember. May 19, 1925. And he died on February 21st, 1965. Age 39. Damn. Younger than me. Anyway. All right. Yeah. All right. So I got that. Oh, you know what? I nearly forgot. But the Notorious B.I.G., his birthday is also on May 21st, 1972. So happy belated, Brother Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls. And I was going to play one of his tracks. Like, I was playing his song. I was playing his second album, and I had the verse, Dick Harder Than a Missile, Yo. Was that how it goes? And stuck in my head. But instead, I'm going to honor him by giving you a better quote. And he goes, stay far from timid. Only make moves if your heart's in it. And live the phrase, sky's the limit. I'm working on it, Biggie. I am working on it. And what else do I have? Oh, last but not least. Oh, man, I am going over. Okay, yeah, last but not least, I felt the need to share this quote that I found again on that showed up on my timeline on Instagram. And it goes, stop blaming yourself for overthinking someone who's inconsistent and confusing as fuck. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, you know what? I'm not going to elaborate. I'm just going to. Let it marinate, man. Let it marinate. If you know, you know. All right. Okay. So let's jump to news and random thoughts. And because it's going to be a long, yeah, news and random thoughts, it's going to be a long one. So grab a lunch, sit back, relax, and hang on for the ride. So let's go. Dun, dun. All right. Okay. Bienvenue. All right. So I was just thinking about PN Progress. I if you're a fan of the podcast, you've probably heard me talk about Precision Nutrition, how I'm part of, or I've joined Precision Nutrition. Yeah, it's just, how do I describe it? Precision Nutrition. It's a motherfucker. If you like I'm trying to improve my health. There we go. I'm trying to improve my health. All right. So, and I've mentioned it before. I had gotten into the habit of mention it on the podcast. It was a way to hold myself accountable, and I noticed that the past few episodes I haven't brought it up. So again, this is for if you're a fan of the podcast. Yes, I'm still on that Precision Nutrition track. I just hadn't had anything I felt was worth discussing on the podcast, but I am at a point where I'm trying to understand the science of my fatness, if that makes sense. Like, I'm trying to break down my weight to a science. Because once I understand it, then I'll be willing to put in the work to address. Like, I'm not trying to be a thin model. I'm not trying to, like, eat salad for the rest of my fucking life. But I'm just trying to come up with practical solutions. There we go. So, yeah, that's Precision Nutrition. Funny for, not bad for a guy who had no intention of saying anything much about it, but it doesn't matter. Real quick. So yesterday I watched, just a combination, right? I watched the movie Air. Funny, I had convinced myself that I wasn't going to watch that movie because, what, I want to read about a bunch of a white man making money off a black man. That's the whole show is all about, how he had the guts to invest into a black man. But, you know, anyways, I watched it, and shout out to my homegirl, the homie Jay, because she told me it was a good movie, and I like to doubt her every once in a while, and then, oh, fuck, now I owe her an apology. I'm like, anyways, yeah. So, yeah, no, it was good. I enjoyed the movie, all right? I'll just leave it as enjoyed the movie. Started off corny. Okay, it's not that it started off corny. I started off determined to hate the movie. So I was looking for revenge. Fuck Matt Damon, man. Fuck, I didn't say Brad Pitt. That other white boy. What's his name again? That doesn't matter, right? Oh my God. Overall, I like the movie, but that's not, this segment is not why I'm bringing up the movie. The reason I'm bringing up the movie is because, at a sheer coincidence, I had just finished listening to an episode of Canada the Land, and they were going over the rise and fall of Vice Media. And if you don't know, Vice has recently declared bankruptcy. Let me just make sure I write this out. Okay, let me see if I put it. Vice, Definitive Guide, Vice News, and yeah, isn't that going bankrupt? Oh, there we go. Okay, holy shit. Okay, let's just assume you know, right? So, I was thinking of that segment. I had just finished listening to it, and I was also thinking about another segment they covered about BlackBerry, the rise and fall of BlackBerry, right? And the three put together, Air, the movie Air, the rise and fall of BlackBerry, the rise and fall of Vice, had me thinking about how, reflecting on how growing up, I managed to convince myself that risk was the root of all evil. Taking risk was the root of all evil. And the reason, because I guess I was thinking about how, so in Air, you know how, we all know how the story ends, right? So when Nike decided to invest in Nike, they were taking a risk. And the whole movie is the one guy, the main character, who was like Matt Damon's character, who was like, yo, I know what I'm doing, man. I don't know. I see it. I see this Jordan guy is going to be big. And we want to be part of that excellence. So let's make a sneaker dedicated for him. Like, I still remember when Air Jordan came out. Okay, was Jordan a big deal back then? Holy shit. I remember buying Air Jordans in 84. I guess I'm confused on what the timeline, whether they invested in him before he became a big deal or he became a big deal and then they were like, yeah, let's jump in on it. That's the part I'm a little confused, but that's not the point, right? Is there was a common theme of, yo, we got to take risks. What's that expression? Something about boats being safe on harbor. Wait, ships safe, harbor. Harbor, I gotta say, quote, I gotta find that quote. It goes, yep, a ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for. Yeah, okay, where I'm going with this is, I was thinking about when I was listening to the rise and fall of BlackBerry and Vice, and how the two people, like, they kept bringing up about how they fucked it up. I guess I'd gotten so used to hearing about people's failures, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a business venture, whether it's a BlackBerry, whatever. And it's funny how after you fail, everyone's got a whole bunch of theory. Everyone's got jokes. Everyone's like, fucking idiot, blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, I remember listening to, because I'm not sure if that was the intentions of the storytellers, but I remember listening to all these stories and convincing myself or telling myself or believing the lesson learned is, okay, don't fail. Failure is a bad thing. And then from there, I translated that, okay, I linked risk. Okay, if I don't want to fail, then don't take risks. So anytime I would hear someone, bankruptcy, whatever, I was so focused on the fact that, well, that's what you get for taking a risk. But the thing is, the successful people in life, the people, they had to take risks to make it happen too. I don't know. It's just interesting how when they tell you the story about someone who took risk and when they fail, it's like, well, idiot. Like, everyone's like, I say everyone, but it's as if the theory is we shit on them. It's like, yeah, fuck, that's what you get for trying, motherfucker. But when they succeed, it's like, what a genius, what a blah, blah. Okay, look, I'm gonna take an extreme example, right? I'm gonna get myself in trouble. I wanna be, but I know this is one of those probably my inability to understand nuance, but I remember processing that thought of looking at Hitler, right? And how how the motherfucker ends up shooting himself in the mouth, right? Like the punk bitch that he was, right? But I remember, because I like to listen to World War II documentary, but I remember reaching this conclusion. I'm like, oh, yeah, Hitler did some evil shit. But it had me thinking about it is, but he was, not he was just, I don't mean like that, but his crime was wanting to be the top dog. I mean, it's more complicated. Okay, I know. It's not just Hitler, but I guess Germany at the time is they wanted to be where England, the States were. That ambition. They took a risk. That's my point. They took a risk. Failed like a motherfucker. I mean, yeah, they killed a lot of people doing so. Shit like that, right? But it's just... Okay, I know it's a bad example because I'm realizing that... So this is what goes on, right? In my head, I have all these thoughts. But when I try to express it to someone, I can understand someone looking back at me going, what the fuck? Is this motherfucker saying some pro-Hitler shit? No. I am saying... I'm saying, I was about to say, you got to take risk in life. No, I realize that that's a fucked up thing to say. Look, all I'm just trying to say is watching that Air documentary just had me thinking about how, I get it. Anyone we are speaking about now, whether they failed or not, it all started with a risk on their part. It all started with a bunch of people saying, yeah, that shit ain't gonna happen. Nah, man, you crazy. And shit like that. But I don't know. It's like history is written by madmen. What's that other one? Well-behaved ladies seldom make history. Okay, you know what? It would make more sense if you had the context of where I came from. I came from a family where conservative Christians don't take risks, don't rock the boat. And it's just the way I process the world. And I remember getting to a point where I said, convinced myself that people who take risks are bad. People who take risks, like the purpose to life is to be a good person. And by good, I mean convenient to everyone else. It's you know, it's to, like I had a, I'm only realizing now that I had a distorted, I'm sharing my distorted view of the world and obeying, being good to your parents, being good to authority. You know what I mean? It's just, I guess, let me back up and say, I'm just fascinated by people who can take risks, who manage risks, who take those risks. And, not Hitler. I'm not talking about Hitler, but I'm just saying, well, okay. Not Hitler, but I'm thinking about the white dude who decided to invest in a slave ship, and who decided to open up a plantation and or, you know, own slaves. You know what I mean? Oh, my favorite is the white dude from France. Decided to get into the slavery business in Haiti right before the revolution. Days before the revolution. So, yeah, Dad, I'm going to be a success. You're going to see. And he flies to Haiti, and next thing you know, he's got a fucking machete rocking through his head. Happy Haitian flag, Happy Haitian Flag Day, y'all. Anyways, yeah, so, I'm again, this is one of those, I'm not making a point. I'm just having a reflection, observation on the concept of risk. And it just, had me thinking, man. Just, you know, you're thinking, there it goes. Right, all right. Let me develop that idea and get back to you. So, risk. I'm not telling you to take them. I'm not saying that, yeah, I'm going to start taking more risk. Well, I mean, technically, I am taking this risk by doing this podcast, but that's another story. This ain't me preaching to you about it. This is just me evaluating my understanding of the concept of risk. There we go. All right. Okay. Next item on the rundown sheet. Yeah, I gotta warn you, man. News and random thoughts. It's gonna be a bit. I have item for this one here, right? But okay. So let's do with this. Oh. You know, this one is going to be a quick one. It's something that I tweeted a while back, and it goes, it just hit me. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Ooh, I'm on the wrong page. Ooh, shit. Unity. Two notification. like, sorry. Okay, I am so distracted. All right, okay. So what I was saying is, long story short, I didn't realize it. I do it on my podcast, but the tweet goes, it just hit me. I have a lot to say about racism. I mean, I knew, I just didn't realize to what point. And yeah, part of this podcast is I like to talk shit about racism. Yeah, I just, that's all. That's it. I have a lot to say about racism. Put me in a barbershop and the theme of racism comes up. Don't get me started or else no one's getting their haircut. All right, so here we go. All right, go. Keep on moving. What else did I put? All right. Okay. The difficulty for cis hetero males to be authentic. Authentic. I've been debating on whether to bring up stuff that's gone on at work. At my work. Like go into detail. Of course not. You know, I'm not going to use actual names or whatever, right? But I like to pretend like if this shit gets played out loud, I can keep my head up. There's no shame. I'm not gonna say anything that's wrong. So Let me just get to the point. I'll just get to the point. So anything I say is not meant to offend, diss, or betray trust of anyone, right? But it's just I had a moment at work where I realized. And I've used is I was talking to coworkers who just happened to all be cis hetero males and white, and we were talking about basically homosexuality, I guess. The acceptance of, I think in the end, if I were to summarize it, is our acceptance of homosexuality, not the understanding, but. Okay, here's where this conversation went. And it's essentially, I'll admit for myself, right? There was a journey before, like, I struggle with homophobia. I mean, I'm better than I was before, but it's like, it's been a journey to go from, I don't know if I say I'd struggle, but I guess I'm trying to say, look, I'm not trying to be like the white person saying, I can never be racist, okay? Look, I'm saying, look, I'm sure I grew up, I was born with the Bible and was taught that, yo, Adam and Eve, that's all you need to know. And then, you know, fast forward, find out that my fucking pastor's been lying to me, right? The Bible doesn't have all the answers, right? The world is more complicated. Sexuality is more complicated than that. It's like, Adam and Eve, the story doesn't make fucking sense in the first place. It's bad enough they made him white, but that's not the point. My point is, it was a journey to unlearn what I thought I knew about sexuality, sexual orientation, and all that stuff, right? And so all this to say is, so I was entertaining a conversation with these folks about homosexuality. And all this started is because they were talking about, that episode of, not this, I nearly said This Is Us, that episode of, what's that video game? The Last of Us, all right? And I think it was the second episode, and The Last of Us, The Last, make sure I got the, of Us. Okay, let me... Storytelling. Yes, The Last of Us. Okay, so one of their episodes I found was a beautiful love story. It was an amazing love story. Shit caught me off guard because I'm used to zombie movies, and when it involves two dudes, someone's getting killed, right? One's playing the other, whatever. But instead, it turned into a love story. Now, I was surrounded by the other dude saying shit like, yo, why do they have to throw it in our face? And I'm like, oh, you're at that point of your journey, whatever, right? Because I in one end, I'm like, okay, they trust me enough to reveal that about themselves, right? So my intention was not to judge you. My intention was to meet them where they were at and help them reach the conclusion that I made is, yo, the end goal is to make it normal. The end goal is that you could look at, go through that story episode of This Is Us, involving two male characters who are in love, and leave feeling like the same way you felt after The Notebook or some shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, this is either like either you hate love stories or you love stories. If you hate love stories, one thing. But if you love it, can process it, then you'll enjoy it, right? But if you hate love stories, we get it. But if you're just, oh, I would have liked the story if it involved a chick, you know what I mean? Then that's the problem. Now, I didn't throw that part in their face. I didn't throw the, oh, you mean homophobic, you piece of shit. I didn't do all that. But I just kept saying, look, the end goal is to not give a fuck. Normalize. Like, by the end, okay, the one thing, okay, man, I'll make some progress. They all realize that, okay, maybe I'm still struggling with it, but the next generation will understand this better than I do. Yes, we did get to that point of the conversation. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I kept remembering, they kept starting, look, I don't have a problem with them, but they kept doing that shit. I don't have a problem with homosexuality, but I don't have, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And I was trying to get them to say, look, because I gave them a personal story is when I was in their shoes. And but they couldn't stop themselves from saying the stupid shit. I don't have a problem with it, but. And it just, that's the part where I started to wonder whether this might be a, again, I'm generalizing, but this might be a cis hetero male thing in that we refuse to admit what we can't do. So I do believe these guys, like, you know, if there was a gay person present, they wouldn't be an asshole about it. But but I would not be surprised if they made them feel uneasy. It's like, so what? You know, I forget that I'm not a therapist, but I guess what I was trying to get them to acknowledge is, okay, yes, I do have a problem to a certain extent, but I'm working on it. I was trying to get them to reach that conclusion, but that failed. Anyway, I remember leaving that conversation feeling a little disappointed. Not necessarily in them, but more in, because on one end, I'm like, shit, if you struggle with this shit, how are you going to handle racial issues? You know what I mean? How are you going to handle, like, because it sounds to me that you're like, you're also the person to be like, you know, there's things you want to ask me, there's shit you want to say. And if you said it, it would start with, I'm not racist, but. It's kind of like, I would prefer you just said, yes, I struggle with racism. It would work better for me. I struggle with racism. Not you, Blackie. I'm just saying, I still see the shit that I'm still unlearning this shit. Anyway, yeah, I don't know if I'm making two different conversations right now, but it did have me thinking about cis hetero male thing. Now, cis hetero male behavior. Now, I gotta also bring up that, okay, I am generalizing by saying cis hetero male behavior, because I'm sure there's some cis hetero males out there who would be like, yeah, who would embarrass me in terms of, oh shit, they get it. Or they know this being what it means to be authentic. I just bring this up because I was thinking about how I was listening to another episode of the Black Fat Fam podcast. And it's two, is it non-binary? It's two queer podcasters. And there's a running theme of being authentic. I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's rare for me to hear a guy talk about, I'm trying to be more authentic. Don't say stupid shit like keeping it real about being a gangster, but like being authentic, like, this shit scares me. This shit makes me cry. I worry that I'm not a good dad. You know what I mean? Like, being able to admit, being able to be fucking vulnerable. That's what I'm trying to get at. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Like, okay. So I said cis hetero male, but really is members of the cult of masculinity. Yeah, those guys, yeah, they ain't trying to be authentic. That's part of being a real man is being fake as fuck. But that's another story. There you have it. There you have it. All right. So I labeled this segment as the difficulty for cis hetero males to be authentic. And yeah, subject worth looking into. But okay, more news later. All right. okay. So this next item, I tell you what, this is what's going on, right? And I'm not, I want to be started out by saying I'm not doing this because she's hot. Okay, so you probably if you're on your social media, you've probably seen the headline of or heard the story of this plus size model struggling to walk down the United Airlines airplane aisle sparks discrimination debate. So you probably saw this clip of this plus size model who's and you know, she's got like a very curvy big body and she's trying to walk through the aisles of a plane, and she's struggling through. Now, okay, let me confess my sins before I get serious with all of y'all. First time I saw that, I was looking at that ass. I was wishing I was part of that piece of fit. I was wishing she was pushing against my body and shit like that, all right? Did you need to hear that? No. Did I need to say it? Yes. Is it my podcast? Yeah. All right, so I said it. I got that shit out my system. I was not focused on the fucking story. I was looking at this woman, this white woman, squeezing herself through, struggling to get through the aisle, right? And you know what I did next? What I did next was worse than me bringing up, you know, my lust for this woman, right? What I did next is read the comment section. And if you want to find some ignorance, yeah, go in the comment section of that kind of story. But that's not my point, right? Apparently, it was so the story was introduced as TikToker is bitching about the airline and wants like I'm paraphrasing, right? But the sense was this fat TikToker wants demands that American Airlines and all your airlines provide more space so she could walk through the aisle. And that's not at all what was the point of that clip was. So right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the actual message she was trying to convey. But yes, she does have a point about those aisles being too narrow. But first, I'm going to do her service by letting her play the original video, all right? And then I'll talk to you about what else is evil about it, right? Okay, so here we go. The name of this content creator is...
So this is an awkward time.
Oops, sorry. The name of the content creator is... Bober VIP. Bobbery VIP? Bob... B-O... Berry VIP. Boberry VIP. English language sucks, but here we go. So this is her. Take it away, Boberry.
So this is an awkward topic, but we're going to go ahead and get awkward and talk about it. Okay. I don't fit in a standard airplane lavatory at all. Forget the difficulty of having to get two seats to fly. Accessibility to a bathroom is the number one roadblock for me when it comes to long distance travel. While I was researching solutions to this, I found this website, wheelchairtravel.org. They have a really great article on wheelchair accessible airplane lavatories. This is where I learned that US law requires wheelchair accessible lavatory on all wide body crafts, but they don't make the same requirement for narrow bodies. Mm. So if I'm flying on a narrow body airplane, I can't use the bathroom and my maximum flight time is about 6 hours. I've never had a problem with that before, except once I came super close to having an accident on a flight from San Francisco to Chicago. There was some bad weather and my plane was rerouted. They tacked on an extra 2 hours to the flight and things got a little sketch, but that's a story for a different day. Wide-body planes are used for long-haul flights, so if you're going someplace pretty far away and you're going to be on the plane a long time, there's going to be at least one wheelchair-accessible lavatory on board that's also big enough for a big person to use. When I flew to Spain, I flew on a United Boeing 777-300ER, and this is a wide-bodied plane. It has two aisles, which makes it wide-body. And when they had us enter the plane, they had us come in at the front. So I checked all of the lavatories on the way to my seat to figure out which one was the big one. The two business class lavatories at the very front of the plane are standard size, and they are too small for me. A little further back on the plane, there are two more business class lavatories, and even though they look like they're the same size on this seat chart, they are not. The one on the right is a standard size lavatory, which I don't fit in, but the one on the left is the wheelchair accessible lavatory. It's about twice as big as a standard one, and I fit in this just fine.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there because I realize that you can't see the visual because she's got diagram and she's showing an actual image. And here's the point that I'm making is this is not a complaint video. This wasn't a rant video. This was meant to be an explanation of if you go through what I go through, if you're like in my status, here's solutions to the problem. And apparently, from what I understand, someone named a TikToker by the name of Big Curvy Olivia has accused United Airlines. Wait, what? Wait, hold on a second. Oh, okay, hold on. Okay, so check this out. Here, I'm just going to play this. Make sure, because I'm a little confused about the story, but here we go. Keep going. It goes.
A TikTok user who goes by the name of Big Curvy Olivia has accused United Airlines of discrimination after she posted a video of a plus-size influencer struggling to squeeze down the airplane aisle on a recent flight due to her size. In a video uploaded to TikTok, the woman became stuck as she tried to walk down the aisle only to discover that her hips were wider than the aisle. The woman then had to twist sideways and force herself along the aisle, banging into seats as she went. The woman who posted the video captioned it, "Honestly, it's discrimination that they can't build wider aisles in airplanes in 2023. The woman featured in the video goes by the name of Bowberry VIP on TikTok and hasn't criticized United Airlines, instead preferring to share tips about how to travel as a person of size. She originally posted the video in March and didn't accuse airlines of discrimination because of the size of airplane aisles. Perhaps unbeknown to Big Curvy Olivia is the fact that rather than get bigger, the width of airplane aisles is increasingly getting tighter as airlines squeeze ever more seats on their aircraft. In this case, the woman whose video was used in the now viral meme was filmed struggling to get past United's Polaris business class seats. Premium seats are on a growth trajectory, and the new standard for business class seats with walls and doors do make it difficult for people of size to comfortably get down the aisle. Late last year, a Brazilian plus-sized influencer raged against Qatar Airways after the airline refused to let her travel in economy class and demanded she pay extra for a premium seat with extra space to accommodate her. Qatar Airways had little sympathy for Juliana Neyma and explained in a statement that anyone who impedes upon the space of a fellow traveler and cannot secure their seatbelt or lower their armrests may be required to purchase an additional seat both as a safety precaution and for the comfort and safety of all passengers. Earlier this year, another plus-sized influencer started a campaign to force airlines to provide larger passengers with two seats for no additional fee. Jalen Cheney said people of size should be given two or even three seats for the price of one if they are too large to fit in a single seat. "We are not asking for special treatment or luxury accommodations," Cheney said. "We simply want enough space to travel comfortably, without being discriminated against because of our size." Mateusz Mask.
There we go. All right, okay. Now, I can sympathize with the story, not just because I'm fat myself, but I'm also a tall guy. I have long legs. I'm 6'1", but my legs is probably longer than my waist. I am deformed. Let me put it this way. When these assholes designed these planes, they weren't thinking about buses like that too, right? There's like limited, because of my long legs, there's a lot of places, public transportation, I don't usually fit comfortably in. Oh, you know what? Also Jeep. My friend of mine, co-worker, he's got a Rubicon. And yeah, I don't fit in the backseat of those things too well. That's not my point. The point is, it's true. These fucking airlines are like middle finger to the rest of us. They're like trying to pack this shit like, if they could, they would pack us in like slaves, right? Here's your shackle for your seatbelt and on one on top of each other, right? Okay, it's like that. But they legally can't do that. So what they do is they put in a whole bunch of seats and then let you, the public, bitch about how, oh, these fat people want special treatment. I was laughing because I was thinking of my cousin. He was like, when he found out that I shop at the Big and Tall, he goes, well, and I told him how I can't find shirts my size at a regular store. He goes, well, it's not their fault. You're deformed. You know what I mean? He's an asshole like that. That's fucking family, right? So, but that's my point is, these corporations have you idiots confused like that they're on your side, and a lot of people are using this opportunity to look at, man, okay, look, it's fucked up. We live in this world where if you're fat, the automatic assumption is you're fat because of series of bad moral decisions on your part. Like, you fucked up. You made a lot of bad choices in your life. You're probably faithful to your wife. You probably pay your taxes on time. But if you're fat, you failed like a motherfucker. You failed that life. Some people just see it like that. I don't know if they equate fatness with drug addiction, but it's up there. It's like it's an opportunity for someone to be able to point their finger at you and say, hey, I'm not, get your shit together. Anyways, where I'm going with this is, one, fuck these airlines. It's true. I didn't realize that. Well, okay, this is true that I remember being uncomfortable on these seats. Yeah, if we're in one of those three-seaters, you're not going to like me. And plus, I gained weight. I haven't flown since the pandemic. So I can imagine that the seats were already uncomfortable. I could already imagine I'm probably averaging two seats by myself. Yeah, actually, was it Bowberry VIP? She was talking about how these seats are like 17 inch. Oh, I'm definitely wider than 17 inches. Wait, 17? That's a paper size, right? 17 inches? Hold on a second. It doesn't matter. But my point is, my fat ass won't fit in. It probably will, but you know, you're gonna have to shoehorn me out of it, or something like that. But fucking airlines, man, I fucking hate that. I love to travel. I fucking just hate having to deal with airlines. And not just because I'm fat, but also because I'm tall. If you're sitting in front of me, yeah, fuck you. You're not reclining that seat. You can recline that, but we're gonna fight. That's pretty much it. Either you decide, either on the runway or in the air, we fucking fighting. So don't recline your fucking seat. Sorry, blame the airline. I mean, I usually ask to sit by the what is that door? Usually I go in there, hey, can I get a seat where with a lot of leg room? Next thing you know, I'm responsible for opening the fucking door. I'm cursing a lot, aren't I, eh? Anyway, yeah. I'm responsible for opening the emergency door in case this plane crashes. Let me tell you something, man. This plane crashes. Good luck getting me to calm down. No way I'm keeping it together. Holy shit. Yes. Yeah, man. That I'm calm now, right now. Yeah, I'm listening to you now. But that plane goes out, I have no faith in my ability to not panic. There we go. All right. Anyway, so shout out to, middle fingers to the airlines. Shout out to Bowberry and Olivia. Initially, when I read the story, I thought this Olivia character took her story to make fun of her. But no, it's even worse. She shared her story. She just shared her thoughts like I'm doing, saying, yo, these airlines suck. And in the comment section, what do you think is in there? Bunch of assholes talking about, fuck, you're fucking loose. You know, you can just imagine. Comment section is like the worst part of humanity. Close to it. All right, so, okay, let's go. Okay. Shout out to my man, Garrison Hayes. I'm going to share another clip from his archives where he dropped some science. This is, I think I'm going to call this You Must Learn segment. But yes, This is him addressing someone saying, hey, the KKK were Democrats. So here we go.
Let's not forget the KKK were Democrats. Okay, let's talk about it. That's true. The founder of the KKK and many of its members were a part of the Democratic Party. They were Democrats who hated black people and immigrants and basically anyone who wasn't their primary identity. White. You know who else was white? Abraham Lincoln. Yes, Honest Abe was white, and he once said this: there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. I, as much as any other man, am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race. Abraham Lincoln was a Republican and famously freed the slaves, and yet he still believed disgustingly racist things. And he likely believed those things because his primary identity was also white. It almost seems like whiteness is the primary culprit and not political party. You know who also understood this very interesting thing that you seem to have missed? The Republican Party. When Democrats embraced black civil rights in the 1950s and 60s, Republicans saw a political opening. Their idea was simple: cater to all those folks whose primary identity was their whiteness. They called it the Southern Strategy. And the crazy thing is that it worked like a charm. Ever since Democrats embraced black civil rights, people who identify as white vote overwhelmingly for Republicans. In fact, today, the KKK almost exclusively endorses Republicans because it's never really been about party affiliation. It's always been about white identity politics. But something tells me you already knew that.
Message!
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, I can't elaborate on it, like, say anything better. But I like the fact that the white identity. So when I'm calling you racist, when I'm really asking you, what I'm really saying is you have a fanatical attachment to being white. Like if you heard the beginning of my intro and said F Whitey and felt offended by that, then this is what I'm saying is you have a fanatical attachment to being white. Yeah. The fact you made it this far in the podcast, I don't know what the fuck you were thinking. Maybe you're hoping that things would get better, or that you just formulated a whole bunch. Like, the whole time you were listening to me, thinking of the nasty message you're going to write back about, yo, man, why are you being such a racist? Whatever. But what you should have gotten from this podcast is not for you. All right. Okay. What else do I have? Okay. So TikTok is a threat. I just heard that TikTok was banned in Montana. Montana is not in Canada. So God bless it. Yeah, but apparently they're already starting to ban TikTok. Now, here's the thing. I know that Canada, all these Western countries have beef with China or China. I don't know. Shit ain't right. But TikTok is a dope app. Seriously, man. Let me back up. It's not TikTok that I like. It's the fucking content creator. I don't know what attracts all these content creators. I'm just grateful that they found a place to publish their shit. And a lot of them are on there. But now, even better than that is I was trying to find the words to explain why I love TikTok. Not like I used to love Facebook. It's not that I'm addicted on it, whatever. Okay. I love TikTok for the content creator, not necessarily the two. If there was another means to get a hold of these content creators, I would do that. But this sister's about to drop some science about what makes TikTok dope. Here we go.
I haven't heard anybody say this yet, so I will say it. TikTok is a threat because it is shifting what we value as a collective. My name is Dr. Chelsea, and I'm a neurodivergent educator, writer, and creator, and I'm known on this app for creating the unmasking process. And unmasking is about moving beyond what we have been socially conditioned to believe about ourselves, about others, and about our human experience. And it guides us to remove the mask and create a life that aligns with our needs, values, and purpose. And I spoke about unmasking through the lens of late diagnosed neurodivergence, but unmasking can and should be applied to any human being. Our souls enter this world innocently, and we absorb our experiences, both good and bad, as truth. Our trauma teaches us fear, and our spirit teaches us discernment. And as we learn to love and trust ourselves, we understand how to see the difference. But when something happens that shifts our perspectives, we think back to the moments where we questioned ourselves and didn't trust our intuition, or when we had that idea and then we saw somebody else thrive with the same one. And those moments come and they smack us in the face. And if we're honest, this app has smacked so many of us in the face. it makes me emotional because this app that I initially avoided showed us the beauty and duality of the human experience.
Right.
It humanized us as we connected in ways we have never experienced in our lifetimes. TikTok connected our experiences. We were told that our phones were distracting us from the world, but when our worlds became so isolated, yep, we turned to this app and realized we were not as different as we were taught to believe. Mm-hmm. TikTok created a platform for human intimacy, a place where we can feel safe, a place where we can gather information and knowledge and make informed decisions about our lives for the first time. We laughed, we cried, we healed. TikTok was the place where we can be authentically ourselves. We didn't have to be performative. We didn't have to make sure our lives were perfectly created and curated to be accepted. We could just simply be. As we continue to connect and heal, our values begin to shift. We move away from valuing the things that once divided us, like money and social identity. And as our values shift, it is a threat to the institutions that depend on our labor, money, and brokenness to sustain. So if this app disappeared, right, I am challenging us to bring our connections outside of this app and into the real world. Connect with others in a real way. Travel. Speak to the stranger. Girl, write that book. It may not happen overnight, yep, but I refuse to go back to the life that capitalism curated for me.
Word up.
And I'm going to carry the lessons that TikTok taught me, that I am valuable, I am worthy of space, and that I have purpose. And so do you.
I think what got me about TikTok, what got my attention is that the algorithm kept showing videos of white people who just got it. White people who knew how to detach themselves from their identity as white people. White people who could articulate Black Lives Matter, Malcolm X quote, and actually mean it, like not talk that, oh, I don't see race shit, like could speak beyond white fragility. Who were like, and this is very rare for me, who were literate in Black people thinking. Right, thinking outside of themselves. Okay, so that's what fascinated me the most about TikTok. But I also saw Black people doing shit that I'm not used to seeing. Black people being vulnerable, being sensitive, being like nerds, being no, I don't play basketball. Like who using comedy. You know what? TikTok is part of what influenced this podcast. Like she's right. TikTok goes away, I have this podcast. What I don't have is a means to reach out to people and basically, because that's what the point of this podcast is just me being, this is me just being. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm not trying to, I'm just being myself to a point where you might be able to say, oh shit, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I was allowed to do that. I was told that I needed to shrink for this world. No, I didn't realize people like us existed. That's the main focus of this podcast. And people like it, and some of these content creators on TikTok. Anyway, so there we at, man. Oh shit. Okay, hold on, my friend. Oh, my bad. The name of this content creator is Heavy on the DR? Oh, Dr. C Unconventional Intellects. Oh, hello. Okay, Dr. Chelsea. She is AUDHD educator uniting our experience. Click on for more. All right, fascinating human being, right? I like this. I like discovering these kind of contents. All right, okay. You know what? One last before we get into final thoughts, I feel the need to share this dope ass verse. Bring back this, you know what? From Ludacris. Fuck it, I'll play it, right? Even though I should be playing some Biggie, but I'm gonna just fuck it. I forget, it's my podcast. I'm gonna play this. This cipher Ludacris did on BET. And it just reminded me of, oh, that's why I love hip hop. But yeah, it's the kind of rhymes where you're like LL Cool J says is checking out the rapper and the rhyme that he said. It's that kind of rhyme. But so here we go. And it's dope.
If you mention MCs, Looters in the best of. Uh-huh. I'ma stay hard till I die like Hugh Hefner. Yeah. Magnum sponsored, I'm longer than a marathon. Call me Mega like the head of the Decepticon.
Oh.
In my prime like Optimus, rock to this. Chain hung over like Zach Galifianakis. They say Luda's in the movies, why he rapping still? Cause I need more Jaguars than Jacksonville. More Bills than Buffalo from my flow.
Yeah.
And more Blue Jays than Toronto.
Come on.
Ludacris, I made Soccer Moms rap. Albums, I drop 8 like Octomoms. Holly clubbing, when I do, I be flexing. I be in the cut, that's a Luda C-section. Y'all get your strings pulled, I'm the orchestrator. Cause I got it made like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Get it? I Terminator, super duper man. Kill yourself if you ain't no damn Luda fan. Now what?
God damn Luda. His rhymes aren't fancies, they're clever. It's like Rakim said, it's simple, Levin. It's simple, ain't it? But quite clever. But yeah, man. Anyways, dope ass. Dope. All right. Final thoughts. What time is it? Yeah, final thoughts, and we let you out of here. All right. So here we go. Woo! All right. Let me start out by saying, yo, my Saturday was a little fucked up. I just read, I I don't know if this is normal, but I was made aware on Google review. Someone wrote a negative review of my therapist. And I went through a lot of phases. The first one was, what the fuck? I was mad. I was fucking mad. I took that shit personally. And she wrote me about it, you know, and especially she used the word, yeah, no, that was hurtful, bothered me, whatever. And I read the review and I won't lie, but I took it like, I was on some Biggie shit. I'm like, or Tupac shit. It's like, what? You want to go with that fro? Fuck that fro. You know, but I have to remind myself that, yo, therapy sessions are like that. So I can preach to you about going into therapy, but yes, there is that risk. Hey, were we talking about risk earlier on? There is that risk that you end up with a therapist that you're just not compatible with. And it's simply an incompatibility issue. It's not a, I mean, maybe they suck at their job, whatever. It is possible. But in my experience, it's a compatible, like, I made sure to find a black therapist. When I was going through my rage, this rage I can't explain, like, I was in a bad fucking place, and I ended up finding, I made sure to go to a black therapist, because if I had one more white person talk about how, race is just a construct, basically dismiss how race is a factor for me, I might have stabbed him. I might have, stab a fucking therapist, and I'd be podcasting from jail. They let you podcast in jail, right? Anyway, yeah. So, I took it personally. So, but I used some constructive energy, and I wrote my own review to counter the other person. And, you know, at first, maybe, you know, I kind of felt like saying, "Hey, fuck that person for writing whatever the fuck they wrote," but I just, essentially, in their review, they accused her, granted, I don't know the full story, like, maybe it is true that, because in the review, she said that things didn't work out, and she stopped returning my phone calls. That's was the accusation, but she actually used her name, first and last name, and, this review will make it worse if it's a white woman who wrote it, because this is, you know, therapist is black and she's running a business here, and all it takes is one bad Google review for you to be considered. Look, long story short, I took that shit personally. But then again, I was gonna compare myself to Malcolm hearing about someone dissing Elijah Muhammad. Okay, your therapist is not supposed to be Elijah Muhammad. I get it. Anyways, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting the details about that shit. But if it's a white woman who wrote that review, oh, that makes it even worse. But anyways, I fought negativity by writing in just my own review. And here's hoping that, I've been having fun doing this. Hold on, let's see if someone else wrote, let's see if someone wrote another review. Nope, still the same 5-1. Did anyone like my review? Fuck, my feelings are hurt. Nope, not even. Motherfuckers. All right. You know, the only thing I don't like is I just told the world that I'm in therapy. Granted, I do it on this podcast, but, you know, who listens to this podcast? Anyways, all right, okay. Now that I got that out of my system. Oh, right. Okay. Someone, again, someone. This was on Reddit. I'm going to create an account on Reddit to promote this podcast. But so I'm on the I'm on a podcast subreddit, and someone asked a question. Why should I listen to your podcast? And I love that they asked. They said, what's your elevator pitch? And the truth is, bottom line is, I'm still figuring it out. I had a moment with my podcast. I'm going to share something. I'll be real with you. I don't like my own podcast. I like what I talk about. I like what I say. I like developing the ideas. I like coming up with ideas to talk about. But when I hit play to listen to it, I'm like, fuck. But a lot of it is a lot of self-hatred. So I'm dealing with that. Like I had a moment where I realized, so I told you all this shit, that I realized if I was ghostwriting this podcast, if someone else were saying these words and they believed in it more than I believed in it, then I'd be like, yeah, I love this podcast. I would love that podcast more if it wasn't me doing it. Go figure. But I want the fucking credit, you know what I mean? But I don't have an elevator pitch. I'm still working on it. I'm still figuring that out, but I'm still figuring that out. But that's the joy. That's the fun in all this. It's a journey. All this shit is a journey. It's the one good thing I'm willing to say I got going for myself right now. This journey of podcasting. It's my risk. It's my... If I succeed, it can't take away my dignity. No, wrong lyrics. It goes, if I fail, if I succeed. Doesn't matter. My point is... I don't know. I feel I'm on the right path. I don't usually trust anything in my gut, but there's something in me saying, keep at it. Nah, I feel like I'm doing, it's one of the, there are two times where I feel like I'm doing the right thing. Even when I'm listening to my podcast and don't enjoy it, right? There are two times, okay, so like I feel like I'm onto something. That's my point. And the other time that I feel like I'm doing the right thing is when I'm urinating. I mean, when I'm my both my hands are on my Johnson. That's right, both hands, ladies. Anyway, okay, when one of my hands is on my Johnson, I feel like I know what I'm doing. And podcasting is the other time where I feel like I know what I'm doing. You know, does that make sense? Does that make sense? Anyway, wisdom. All right. Last but not least, or as I say, make sure I. I forgot. Yes. Okay. Last but not least, what's up with the title and the intro verse? Okay, well, initially, fuck it, I'm going to do this, right? Initially, I just wanted to call this episode, I Am Malcolm X, especially when I realized that I didn't bring it up on the past episode. Excuse me. I just wanted an opportunity, like the title of this episode is going to be episode 80, I Am Malcolm X. Did not see that coming. Hold on a second. And initially, this is where it was going to come from. Remember this clip from the Malcolm X movie?
So today, May 19th, we celebrate Malcolm X's birthday because he was a great, great Afro-American. And Malcolm X is you, all of you. And you are Malcolm X.
I'm Malcolm X!
I'm Malcolm X!
I'm Malcolm X!
I'm Malcolm X!
I'm Malcolm X.
I am Malcolm X.
I am Malcolm X.
I am Malcolm X.
I am Malcolm X.
Beautiful. Yeah. I remember when I first saw that scene and didn't understand what that meant. But we're continuing his legacy, man. We're the reason that he We are not, I was going to say proof, signs that he existed, that he walked among us. We're continuing his legacy. Now, hold on a second. I'm going to play, there's many clips I could play about Malcolm X, and fuck it, I'm going to go with this one here real quick. Just because it's on my timeline. It was on my timeline.
Negro community has a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community, exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is in the, on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed, whether he is educated or whether he is dumb, whether he's a Christian or whether he's a Muslim. As long as he is black and a member of the Negro community, the white public thinks that the white policeman is justified in going in there and trampling on that man's civil rights and on that man's human rights. Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element, they can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminal.
Yeah, he was an advanced thinker, man. It was it's amazing. This was what, 1960? What year was this clip showed up? Okay, before 1969. All right, so long time. Oh fuck, that was a very long time ago. And he got it. He understood it. He was just, that's what's fucked up, man. Oh, before 1965, sorry. He was just speaking about the problem, and they saw it as a threat. And they treated him like a threat. That's all he did was, I remember my teen days in the 90s, early 90s. It was in style to wear a Malcolm X cap. Basically, it was just a cap with the X on it. And one time, this white dude caught me off guard and says, why do you wear it? Because that's how they do in Canada. That's how white people do in Ottawa. Whatever. Whatever. Look, okay. I'm not going to shit on all white people in Ottawa. But this white dude caught me off guard. And he didn't give a fuck I was wearing it. What bothered me is I couldn't answer his question. And I remember, because I used to believe that if I can't answer it, then there's no reason for me to do it. But that's not the point. And I remember, I read the biography and all that shit. I knew he did speeches, but I couldn't speak to what made Malcolm X the legend so special. What made him live beyond. It wasn't just the Mecca thing. It wasn't just how he grew the Nation of Islam. It wasn't that. I guess I didn't realize it at the time that I didn't have enough life experience to explain what made Malcolm X great. Like, I could give you the show notes? No, the talking points. I wanted to go beyond talking points. And now, if I could go back in time, I would say, yo, the brother understands what I'm going through and is proposing solutions. That's what made him great. He just understood. He could help me understand. He could help me figure out why I'm going ouch. Why I'm feeling so, why it feels like he's making sense of my problems. He's the closest hope I have to a solution. He still is. He still is. But yeah, I didn't get it at the time. I didn't get it at the time, but to me, that's what made Malcolm X great. I'm just thinking about it. It's imagining being that for someone else. I don't know. I'm trying to. I don't know. It's a huge burden to, like, okay, look, man. People, see, these white kids talk a lot about, you know, oh, I can't say shit anymore. People are easily offended. Yeah, try to tell that to Malcolm X. They killed him for that shit. Actually, you know what? I'm still not clear who killed them, what killed them, whatever, but I know it was, but, you know, they had to get, what's that line by P.E.? Is, welcome to the Terror Dome. I'm determined to, okay, I'm about to finish it, but I'm going to get that line from Welcome to the Terror Dome. You can tell I love hip hop. The lyrics, okay, from Malcolm. Do you see Malcolm? Nope. Okay, he goes, every brother ain't a brother, cause a black hand squeeze on Malcolm X, the man, on Malcolm X, the man, the shooting of Huey Newton, from a hand of a nig, pull the trig. Yes. Anyways, yeah, every brother ain't a brother. Yeah. I know the people who killed them were black. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. Unless there was like some, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Right now we're remembering his birthday. Happy birthday, Brother Malcolm. Malcolm Little. Actually, you know what? Out of respect, his name was El-Hajj. Fuck. I was trying to, God damn it. Let me call him by the name he wanted us to call him by, and it was, shame on me for having to Google this shit. El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. There we go. There we go. Yes. Oh, right. So, long story short, the reason why I picked Middle Finger by Wale, two things. One is because I just wanted an opportunity to remember Malcolm X and use the word "I am Malcolm." If you notice, I didn't read the whole rap verse. I just read the chorus and the first four lines, and where it ends with "I am." Oh, he goes, "I'm kind of like Malcolm X," but whatever. Anyways, the second reason, actually, I won't even think it. I don't want to think it too much, but Middle Finger to the World. I love that track. Fuck you, leave me alone. It's kind of weird how, like, I'll tell you, I hate people, but I don't behave like a person who hates people. Like, I'll say the words. It just feels easier to just say I hate people when I'm thinking of getting a pet. This is where this is going. I'm actually considering getting a pet, and I'm debating between a dog and a cat. And this is not the point, but yeah, you know why? Because I hate people. I need to make friends, but I hate people. So I figure if I start with a pet, maybe I will warm up I'm laughing because I'm like, hey, listen to my podcast. As I tell you, I hate people. Look, man, if you have a flat, I'll help you out, assuming I have time and shit like that. You know what I mean? I don't hate people to that point. Like, I'm not plotting world domination. Granted, I have the means for it. I just have a lot of angry feelings inside me, and I'm working through it. That's what this podcast is about. And if you're listening to it, then you're kind of helping me defuse this bomb, in this internal bomb inside of me. But with that said, this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Real quick, if you notice in my AKA, I added B.Black. Well, that's my username on TikTok, right? And if you can DM me on TikTok for B.Black, on Twitter via B.Black or Shut Up Podcast, or keep it old school and just go to the website and go to shutuppodcast.com. Email me at shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And on the website, again, you can subscribe to this podcast using the RSS feed that's on it. It's on the main page. Or just go to Google and Apple Podcasts. Yo. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast.